Okay, we are on sentence 16.
16?
16 in the first chapter. Okay, so actually, Hal, you gave me a topic now to talk about. You don't realize it. Hal said, sentence you'd love. But that's not what it says in any of your books.
No, it says.
Mm-hmm.
It's right here.
Canadian
book.
Says
Yud Vav? Mm-hmm. There is a Yud. There's a Tet Vav.
Yes. No, Yud Vav, right here.
That's
not
Yud
Vav.
Yud Zion.
She has the...
I do know how to
see
Yud Vav.
That's Yud Zion. Vav.
It's a love.
Oh, it's a pet vav. I know I have.
It's pet that. Vav, pet Zion.
Okay, what, so what's the holiday, the new year for trees?
The big pot.
The Sufish Vav is?
Looks like a chain.
Two Vishvat in the alphabet for those we're not in the Hebrew reading class.
Mm-hmm.
Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Zion, Ches, Tet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
16 is. You see what all your books say 16 is?
It says 16.
16 is. Tet, we remember, is 9.
Zion.
Zion is?
7.
So how come we do this instead of saying
Yud
Vav here? Well, let's go this way because that'll give us the answer over here. What would this be for 15 according to that way? The right way. In other words, if it would be straight. Just why you said Yud Vav because Yud is 10 and Vav is 6. So if so, what would be 15?
Yud-Heh.
Which spells?
Oh.
One of the names of God. And that's why we don't use either for this. This would be Yud Vav, which is similar found in the names of God also. But anyway, so that's why we use for 15 and for 16, we use 9 and 6. And 9 and 7 for those two.
It's like doing wrong numbers.
It's this Hebrew numbers are only similar to Roman numbers in the following. Does anybody know offhand how we write this year's Hebrew date?
Right,
57, 75 equals, how do we write this in Hebrew? Is there anything around here on our calendar? Is it written in Hebrew?
I don't know.
No, it's written in English. Here, on this calendar, I don't think it's in Hebrew, but if you would take a look. Huh? Maybe on the outside on the cover. Also not. Anyway, this is the way we write this year. Let me just see in this book here if it has the year written in Hebrew characters. It does not.
Is that?
That is. No, don't show me that yet. I don't want to see that yet. Not yet. Okay. The way we write this year is Tuf Shin
Ayin
Hey. So, let's just add this up. You have to know the alphabet by heart. So again, everybody who's in the Hebrew reading practice,
don't
know that? No, it's not. This doesn't follow the order. This is an entirely different thing. No, we're not talking about that now, Cassian. No. Okay?
Ted is 20 is the 22nd letter.
Yeah, not that way. You have to do what is value, its numerical value. So for those who know the alphabet by heart, this is the way you do it. Like in first grade, Again, Aleph, Bay, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Bob, Zion, Chet, Tet, Yud. Yud is 10. Now in the tens, we start over again. Yud, Chaf, Lamed, Mem, Nun, Samach, Ayin, Hey, Fei, Zofei, I'm sorry, Sadik, Kuf. Kuf is 100. And then for the hundreds, we start over again. Kuf, 100, Resh 200, Shin 300, Tuf 400. So let's just do this again. Tuf therefore is
400.
Shin is 300. Ayin is, we have to go back to Yud, Lamed, Mem, Nun, Samach. Yud, Lamed, Mem, Nun, Samach, Ayin. Hey, Yud, Tav, Lamed, Mem, Nun, Samach, Ayin. Ayin is
70.
And Hey is?
5.
So this equals to?
775. But there's no 0.
So there's no 5.
So what do we do for 5,000?
You add it.
How do we add it?
Well, we know that it's going to be 5 because...
For 1,000
years, it's going to be 5.
So therefore, it's mostly not written. And when I said, don't show me this yet, I don't want to know it yet, because here it says on this calendar, oh, it doesn't have it. It just says Tav Shin Ayin Hey on that Hebrew calendar. It does not have the Hey. If you take a look at all the plaques outside, you will not see it. The way in which it would be is you would write Hey with a line on top of it or a line next to it, which is similar to Roman numerals when you get up to the high numbers.
Okay, but for 1,000 years, you know, you don't...
Right. So that's why it's not done. Because we assume that this book, which says that it was published in Tav Shin Chaf Dalet, Tav Shin, 700, Chaf Dalet 24, 5724, was not published in the year... I'm sorry. It says 700... 24. We don't assume that it was published 5,000 years ago. We assume that it was published in this, I hate to use the word millennium, but that's, so therefore, and that's the similarity that it comes when you've run out of numbers in a certain place, so you have to double up the number. But if any of your books, I don't know if any of them have it written in Hebrew, the date of publishing.
Mm-mm.
It does not.
That's not even in English.
This one's in English.
This one doesn't even have it in English. I should have brought mine before.
The first edition is 1982.
Right. It will have that. That's because that's for the government listing, the Library of Congress listing. That's why it has that. Okay. Sorry. We went off. So when did this story happen, the Megillah happen?
A long time ago.
Long time ago.
Many moons ago.
Okay, again, it's between the first and the second base of Mikdash. That's what is important for us. Mm-hmm. So now, again, just to review for a second, the plan of Ahasuerush was to, according to the Malbim's explanation, was to turn the kingdom from a limited monarchy to an absolute monarchy. He, who was the commoner, not descended from the royal line, wanted to establish this by showing that Vashti, who was from the royal line of Nebuchadnezzar, ruled only as a result of his power, and therefore he called her to appear in front of him with a lot of insults thrown in besides that. She understood what he wanted and refused to come. So now the question is what to do. Now, as we pointed out last week, he, in the words of the Malbim, said love conquers all, and he wanted to find a way to forgive her. So he tells the story with all of the negative things that he did in the story, asking what to do. However, the guys who are there, starting with sentence number 16, however you write that in Hebrew, Vayomer Memuchan, Memuchan says Lifnei HaMelech Vahasarim, in front of, before the king and the officers, Lo Al HaMelech Levado Asa Vashvi HaMalchus. Not only against the king did who sinned? Vashti HaMalka. Well, how did we say that when it says Vashti HaMalka, what does it mean? Is she the royal one or the commoner?
The commoner.
It's not only against the king did she sin. Ki al kol hasarim, against all the officers. Al kol ha'amim, all the peoples. Asher who are b'chol medinot Melech Ahasuerus, in all of the provinces of King Ahasuerus. In other words, it's not just your problem, it's our problem too. So now, the way in which the Malbim explains it is that Memuchan now says to him that according to what we said, there are two ways in which a person would be judged, whether it is a case against the king or just simply an issue between husband and wife. So he says, number one, this is not like a issue between a royal couple here, because she is Malka Vashti. Again, she is only the queen because of you, and she didn't do what you said to come to see her. You commanded her to come. And don't say that she has any explanation because it was done through the chamberlains. No. It's not appropriate neither for you nor for the entire country. It's not just a personal issue. And when he answers, why does it have to say he answers in front of the king and the officers, the sarim, the officers that are there? Remember, the king, when he brought the issue in sentence number 13, the king says to the chachamim, the wise men, yodei ha'itim, who know the times.
Right.
And they are apparently some kind of kitchen cabinet or something like that, and it gives us the name of seven specific people, and they say what to do. And when it now says over here that he's answering in front of the king and the officers, how do the officers get here? Do you have princes here? Okay. How did the princes get over here? How did these guys get into the discussion? It doesn't seem that they were there before. So the Malbim says what happens is he's answering publicly. The king wants to have this as a pretty private discussion with his kitchen cabinet, those few, seven people. But he's answering and says, no, it's not just a thing that you can discuss this way, because in fact it has to do with everyone, with all of the provinces of the king. And it's true that you want to justify that which she did because she is the ruler on her own. Again, that's why he calls her Vashti. You called her Vashti HaMalka, but she is really... I'm sorry, she is Vashti HaMalka. She's Vashti's only queen because of you. She's not a royal person. And... this is going to cause a downfall for all of the men in the country over here. When the words or the story of the queen goes out to all of the women. Now, how does the story go out to all the women? Pretty easy. Everybody, telephone, yes. Everybody starts talking about it. They're all going to know about it. Now, what are they going to know? What are they going to derive from the story? Are they going to say the king who was married to this royal person asked her to come and she didn't want to come and he was insulting her? No, what they are going to hear, that the reason why she didn't want to come, they're not going to say the whole history, all of his plans. They're only going to say the actual story that happened. In other words, because they weren't there. What's this? When the story filters down to the level of the people, what are they going to say?
The queen.
She defied it. That's all they're going to say about it. And that's a simple story. That's all they're going to hear. Because why? They're going to say, HaMelech HaHashverosh, King HaHashverosh, Amar Yisrael HaViyah Sashi HaMalka Lefanov, come before him, and she refused to come. And so what is the story they're going to hear? They're only going to say, that is whom? It is King HaHashverosh. And all he asked was that to bring Vashti in front of him. And he didn't want anything. All he asked was that she should come and appear. And therefore, if so, you know what's going to happen to all of the households? Number one, if you, a wife is going to say to her husband, you're not a king. Number one. And, okay, I'm not a queen either, but I'm equal to you. And you're asking me not to come before you. You're asking me to do some kind of work or something like that. And if so, absolutely so, in Hebrew Koshkin, for sure, I'm not going to listen to what you say. And therefore, this is something that affects all of our provinces. And therefore, Vayom Hazeh, today, what's going to happen to all of the officers is a princess, Tamana Saros Parat Madai. All the princesses are going to say, Asher Shamu Svar HaMalka, that they heard the words, the story of the queen, the Kol Sarei HaMelech, when it happened with all of the officers of the king, of Sadai Bizayon Vakesav, there's going to come two things out of this. Bizayon, how is your translation, the second to the last word?
Disrespect.
And Kesef is?
Anger.
So what are the two things that are going to happen over here? In other words, all of the women who were at the party over here, they're going to hear all of this and all of this discussion that went on. They're going to then say afterwards that that which you tried to bring about, king, to become this absolute ruler, is not going to happen. And they, if you do not kill her, they're going to agree with her. And everything that you had sought to bring about at this time is not going to happen. Because what will happen, that there will not be your entire, both the personal strain in all the families, Bizayon is going to be an embarrassment in all of the houses, and it's also going to be a tremendous quarrel, and the strife was the last word you translated?
Disrespect and anger.
And anger between all of the officers, all of the princes. And therefore, I have the following suggestion. Imala melech tov. It's good in the eyes of the king. You know, we have to speak that way. And he says that there are two things that you must do. And these two things should take care of the two problems. Number one, Yetzei Dvar Malchus Milchonov. There should come out from you only. That is, not from any type of council, but from you alone, you the king, that you are the powerful one, you are the one who makes all of these rules. That what? And number two, it should now be written in the laws of Persian media, and it's something that will not change afterwards. That is, you are going to be making rules. No longer do the rules have to be made or come from any of the council or advisors or anything like that, but it will all come from you, and it's going to be a permanent rule. The Malbim says a German word for here. Gebindet order. Order, I guess we know. Gebinden is tied down. A fast order. It's not something like a temporary order. And it will be, number one, that. Asher lo savo Vashti lifnei HaMelech HaHashverosh. Vashti should not come. Now, the mountain says, well, what does it mean over here? That if you say that Vashti should not come, what the word is going to get out is that not that she refused to come to you, but afterwards she decided she wanted to make up. She felt bad about what she did, that she refused to come to you. However, you say, no more. She's not coming anymore. So first of all, you say she can't come, and that Umalku Soyitain Hamela, and the king should give her position to who? Lira Usa, her friend, Hatova Mimena, who's better than she is. What does that do? By giving it to someone. Now, in Hebrew, Mimena, the word mi as a prefix, always means from. Like, if you ask somebody, how would you say in Hebrew, I am from Poughkeepsie? Ani, I?
Mi
Poughkeepsie. I am from. Mi is from. So, Hatova Mimena, her friend, the other one who is better, what is your translation? Better than her?
It's
the end of sentence 19.
Better than she.
Her
royal status,
another
letter, is better than she.
Better than she. So meh, the Malbim says that the prefix meh can also mean like as a result of. She is better because of her. What do you mean she's better because of her?
Well, she's no longer there. She learned the
lesson.
Better than her.
Yes, exactly. She learned the lesson. Mm-hmm. So she, every wife, any wife that you're going to have is going to be better as a result of what? What she did to the first one. Mm-hmm. Everyone afterwards is going to learn exactly how she has to behave. And again, don't look at any family line or anything like that. So what's going to happen? Benishma, as a result of this, you are going to be able to accomplish your two goals again. The order of the king will be heard throughout his kingdom because it is very great. And all of the women will give honor to their husbands, big and small. What does that mean? Tall and short husbands?
Royal and non-royal.
And the mom says, whether or not the husband is greater than the wife or the husband is not greater than the wife. In other words, there are women who, say, marry up or marry down. So even if she, what had been or what would have been the rule, that, you know, you're sort of like maybe the husband gets pulled up the wife's level or something like that. No, what's going to happen over here is that the wife has to listen to her husband, no matter if the husband is of her stature or station, or even if he is lower than she is, then she will also have to listen to him. Now, just one thing. When it says the order of the king will be heard in all of the provinces, and then it says what? Kirabahi, because it is very
great.
Now, the word Rabbah means great, like Rab means many. Rabim is plural. So what is great over here? What does this modify? Does it modify the province, the kingdom of the king? Or the Malbim says this modifies the rule of the king, because the rule of the king is going to be very great. This is such an important statement that you're going to be making in all the provinces, and everyone will listen. So what happens now? Vayitav hadavar v'nei ha-melech ha-sarim. This is good in the eyes of the king and his princes. Vayas ha-melech kibar memuchan. And he does like Memuchan says. So, what are the princes doing in here? because they are the ones who really have to approve his having this unlimited monarchy. But it says, Vayas HaMelech Kedvar Mimuchan, the king alone does according to what Mimuchan says, without the agreement, or he doesn't need the agreement of the Sarim, of the princes here. Now, the best way I would think of explaining the next sentence is with the following. In San Diego was one of the places where many of the Russian immigrants came to the United States. Now, Russian, what does Russian immigrant mean to you? People came from Russia. What is Russia?
Country.
Okay. What is
the former Soviet Union?
The former Soviet Union. Is the former Soviet Union Russia, or
with a lot of places?
Part of the Soviet Union.
Oh, not that far back. In more recent times.
There was a very high class gratification.
So, what language in the Soviet Union was the language?
Russian, mostly.
So all of the former independent countries, perhaps independent countries today, had their own language. But Russian was this unifying language throughout all of those countries. And when they came to San Diego, I would go to speak to them at the Jewish Community Center. So I would speak in English. And my mother would translate. No, I would speak in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother would translate to Russian. Now, there were people who came who were from Uzbekistan and this stan and that stan and all those places and all of them. So half of the people who came from, let's call it Russia, the actual Russia, they understood the Yiddish. The others didn't understand Yiddish because they came from a Sephardic background. All of those Stans were Sephardic. They didn't understand, but they all knew Russian. So when I first came, I asked, how do you all know Russian? And they said, because thanks to the Soviet government, everything was in Russian here, so we all had to learn Russian. Now, the Malbim with that type of idea explains this sentence over here. He sent messages, books, documents to all the provinces of the king, El Medina, Medina Kitsova, to every country in its script, El Amba'am, and to every people, Kil shall know, according to their language, Liyos Kol Ish Sorer Beveso, that every man should be the what in his house?
Master
in his house. Umedaber Kilashon Amo, and speak according to the language of his people. What's all of this? So Malbim says, his first law would be that you speak according to the language of the husband. Now, what had been, or what would have been the rule here? He said that the rule before was that everyone who would be under the rule of the king would have to speak according to whatever letters would come to him. They would have to be in Persian, because Persian was the language of the ruling country. And therefore, everybody would have to learn Persian. And now that Ahasuerus is strengthening his rule, what he says is that he rules over everyone, and therefore, as far as he's concerned, Persian is no different from any other country or any other language. In other words, they're all my servants. And therefore, I don't care what language you write in. Doesn't matter. You can write in whatever language you want. I know this is different from Russia, where Russia said you have to take our language over everything. But this is the way in which he explains. And therefore, I'm not concerned what language you write in. And as long as you write to me, I'm the important one. And then he says, the letters, therefore, were written to every people according to their language. Again, your language, it's all fine. I'm not concerned. And also that every person would speak according to his language, meaning what? That a wife has to be forced to learn to speak the language of the husband. Now, I'll just read you what he says over here, and that is, and he gave a rule, yistared aleha, that the husband should rule over the wife, v'imsholva, and he should be in charge of her gadon b'shivchaso, like a master for his slave. V'yachol asos badinu mishpat im kinyan kaspo, and he can deal with her like any property, like chattel. Africa, as it is still today in the countries of Africa. Okay, these two rules would now establish his principle. Number one, that he is the absolute ruler, and number two, that the wives have to do everything and follow their husband. Okay, nice, happy thing over here. So now, we've been talking about this for a little while. So the Malbim asks the following question. Who cares? We've been spending so much time on this. Wonderful information about the history of Persia, Ahasuerus. Lovely, lovely. You know, when you read the Megillah and you hear it, you're supposed to hear every word that's being said. And if you miss any of the words, then you're supposed to read it over. And you're supposed to catch up with what you missed and everything like that. These things are all very important for us to know. The Mama says, why in the world do we need to know this? So basically what the Malbim says is, as many people would say when they hear the story of Esther, as we had mentioned, what is missing from the book of Esther? God's name is not here. And if I would tell the story, it sounds like, you know, a very, very nice story about a king, and, you know, he gets angry and he gets a new queen, and she's very beautiful and listens to everything, he listens to her, and her people are threatened, and he saves the people, and it's a very normal story. Okay, so you say not so normal? So that's what the Bible says. That's why this whole chapter is here in the beginning, to tell us how abnormal it is, the events that take place, and therefore for us to see that it is a miracle that is happening behind the scenes over here. So let's just go over a couple of things. That is, without really what happened before, he should never have been able to marry Esther without this whole story coming about. Number two, how could he marry someone who he does not know anything about who she is?
No background
information, no IRS check on her, no Secret Service check on her background. Amma Umalata, her people and her birthplace, he knows absolutely nothing about it. How can he marry someone like this? How can he appoint Haman all of a sudden without any permission from anyone? Like, it doesn't tell us anything, just that Haman becomes promoted. And how, and this again, every time I say this, it's the Malbim lived before the time of the Holocaust, so he asked the question, how could a king agree to a whole people from within his nation to be wiped out? I'm saying every time I say this, I say the Malbim lived before that time, so he says, how could such a thing possibly happen? Okay?
He's not the first. 20th century was not the first time by any means that there were attempts
to wipe out an entire people throughout all the country.
Look, I thought the Inquisition.
That was a religious persecution. This isn't necessarily a religious persecution. In other words, they weren't trying to convert the Jews to another religion. They said, no matter what, all Jews have to be killed. Because there's no such thing as becoming like us or one of us.
When did the Malbim live?
Malbim lived in the late 1800s.
There were pogroms before that.
Pogroms in Russia.
That wasn't an attempt to wipe out everybody.
So that's again the plan of Haman was to wipe out every single Jew, old, young, everything like that, take their everything like that. So again,
all I'm Pharaoh. Well, he didn't want to wipe them out. He wanted to wear them out.
He wanted to destroy the males because, according to the Medrash, he saw that a redeemer was going to come from the males and they would be too strong. So again, all I'm saying is that the Malbim lived before the time of the Holocaust. So therefore, he says, how could such a thing take place? Unfortunately, we know that such a thing did take place. Okay?
Now, let me ask a question.
Yes.
Previously, we had been informed that Memucan was actually Haman.
I never said that, so as I said last week, I'm not responsible for that. Okay, I didn't say who he was. I'm going with the Malbim.
Okay.
But what would your question be?
That was, is Memucan and Haman the same, one and the same?
I don't know. That there is a Medrash that says that? Okay. Now, he says there are a number of things that are going on over here that we have put in. That he's a great, powerful king over 127 provinces. He becomes prominent in a very short time. His wealth is tremendous. He also is a wise, if you'll call it devious or whatever term you want to use, but he's a very wise king in that he figures out a way in which to increase his own power. And he loved Vashti very much, the way the Malbim said last week, is that he wanted to, even after his plans were thwarted, he wanted to save her life. But he still wasn't able to, and yet, in spite of all of these things, what is going to happen is everything is opposite. In other words, he is going to listen to his wife, who's going to say, don't do this. And he's going to choose his wife's opinion over his trusted advisor. Here he kills his first wife, I don't know, first I assume, he kills Vashti because of one of his trusted advisors. And now he's going to do something else. So the Malbim says if you take all of these things and you put them together over here, it is the purpose of this first chapter is to lay the groundwork that we should understand it's a tremendous miracle that's taking place here. Because what's going to take place afterwards is all contrary to everything that came before and shouldn't have happened, if not for the fact that it was miraculous. Now, Ahar HaDvarim, beginning the second chapter, Ahar HaDvarim HaElasad is Kishoch HaMelech Hamas HaMelech HaHashverosh. When his anger cools down, Zohar Svashti remembers Svashti Veitah Sher Asasa, what she did, Veitah Sher Nigzar Oleha. So, what is he going to do over here? He remembers the beauty of Vashti, he remembers her yichus, her lineage, and he says it's going to be very difficult for me to find somebody like her. And what had been decreed upon her also, who is going to voluntarily want to marry me, because if I get there, women are going to say, if he's going to get angry, it's going to be off with my head. And therefore, he says, what am I going to do to get rid of all of these problems? He said, you know what I'm going to do? So the king's lads, his chamberlains answer him, saying, what you should do is look for Noros Pesulos Tavos Mare. Just get a lot of young virgins, probably 40, no? The Abkeda Mel Tehidim, and the king should appoint officers, the Chomedinos Mahuzo, in all of the provinces, the Ikbasu, and they will gather together. What do you mean they'll gather them together? You won't ask questions. They will bring them in. Tovas Mareh, beautiful, El Shushan Habira, El Beit HaNoshim, they should be brought to Shushan, the capital, the house of the women, Al Yad, Hege, Sri Samer, Shomer HaNoshim, to Hege, who is the eunuch of the king, who is the guard of the women, V'Nason Tamrukehem. What do you have translated for that?
They are things for purification be given them.
Okay, a different trans art scroll?
The cosmetician.
Not the cosmetics be given to them.
Customary anointing.
Yeah, so why do I care about that? Mountain basically has to answer.
It's not, they don't just go boom, boom. They have to prepare for a year before they get to see
them. Themselves and ready themselves and beautify themselves.
Yeah, I think it's 6 months of certain types of oils and 6 months of other types of oils.
So, do they want to be queen or do they not want to be queen? You know, when you have the Purim parade and all the girls line up, do they want to be queen or do they not want to be queen?
They don't get a choice.
Okay, so once they don't have a choice, do they have the Patty Harris? Does she want to be queen or does she not want to?
She does not want to be queen.
Patty Hearst?
Patty Hearst. Close enough. You know, newspapers get things wrong all the time.
Unless she was a newspaper heiress.
Yeah. Her dog just won.
Mm-hmm.
Very important news, in case you didn't know.
I didn't realize it was related to her.
But see, they're brainwashed. So maybe they're brainwashed.
So therefore, and he says, why is it important for me to know that the cosmetics come from the king's, I'll say it this way, for the cosmetics come from the king.
He's looking for beauty only.
So they, the women, are not going to feel haughty because they're always, in a sense, going to be indebted to their hairdresser.
Only the hairdresser, sure.
So he didn't use that example, but I think that is what it is. In other words, that they have an association, they have almost like a subjugation to him, because everything that they need is coming not from their own home, not from their own background, not from their family, but everything is coming from the king. And therefore, the girl, Asher Tita Beinei HaMelech, who will be good in the eyes of the king, Timloch Tachas Vashti, will rule in the place of Vashti, Vaitabadavar Beinei HaMelech, who is good in the eyes of the king, Vayav came, and he does it. Okay? So he doesn't get any advice from anyone here, apparently, right? It's good in his eyes, because they have already given him the power. And now we have to see the second thing. So again, the scene is set. Now starts a new paragraph. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan Havira. There was a man, a Yehudi. Now, the Yehudi, what's your translation, Judean?
It says a certain Jew.
Okay. And art scroll?
Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is one of the first instances in Tanakh of the name Yehudi being used for a Jewish person rather than someone from the tribe of Judah. Because historically, at this time, this is at the following the first temple, which tribes are around at the end of the first temple?
Judah
and Benjamin, and from the family of the Kohen and Levi.
Right.
What happened to the other tribes? There were the ten lost tribes. So what is the nation called? The nation had split apart during the time of the first temple into two. The northern kingdom was called Israel, Israel. The lower kingdom around the area of Yerushalayim was called Yehuda. So therefore all the people are called Yehuda. That is, and that's our term Jew comes from that. That's why it's translated, it's a good translation to say Jew, because he was not from the tribe of Yehuda, as we will see in a second. So he is in Shushan, the capital, Ushmo Mordechai, his name Mordechai ben Yair, son of Yair ben Shimi, the son of Shimi ben Kish, son of Kish, Ish Yemini. And is that translated beginning with a B?
A Benjaminite.
Okay, from the tribe of Benjamin. Who do we know Who comes from the tribe of Benjamin? Besides
Benjamin.
No, Benjamin didn't come from the tribe of Benjamin. He was the tribe of Benjamin. Who comes from the tribe of Benjamin historically?
David.
David, no. David is from the tribe of Yehuda.
Okay.
Saul. King Saul is from the tribe of Benjamin. Who is Mordecai? Who is Mordecai and Esther descendant from? Who are Mordecai and Esther descendants? From whom is Mordecai?
From whom are?
Yeah. Okay. From whom are Mordecai and Esther descendants? From Shaul HaMelech, from King Saul. Now, just to put something back in perspective, way back, King Saul loses his kingdom because of what? Among other things?
He was a little bit off.
What?
He was a little off.
No, probably not a little. Because he did not wipe out Amalek. He let Amalek live and who fathered?
Goliath.
Goliath, that's the book of Ruth.
Haman is supposedly
the Haman is a descendant of Agag. And so what are we going to have here? We're going to have the confrontation between the descendant of Shaul and the descendant of Amalek. So now it's going to be set up. Okay. And Asher Haglam Yerushalayim, he was exiled, Mordecai from Yerushalayim, Imagola, with the exile Asher Haglasa im Yechaniah Melch Yudah, exiled together with Yechaniah, the king of Yehuda, Asher Haglam Nebuchadnezzar Melch Babel, that was exiled by Nebuchadnezzar, by Hiel Menes Hadassah, he is raising Hadassah, that's your term, was adopted, which
He's brought up.
Hadassah.
He, Esther.
Bas Dodo, the daughter of his
uncle.
Ki Eina Ovaim, because she has no father and mother. Vanara, Yifas Torah, Yifas Mareh. She is beauty in two things.
They are beautiful.
Huh?
Fair and beautiful.
Fair and beautiful, okay. The most of the Avima, when her father and mother die, the Gafam Mordechai Lolabas. Mordechai takes her as a daughter. Okay.
We've heard other things.
Okay. Let's just see before we go there. We are getting a lot of information over here about Mordechai. So the Mav explains why are we given this information. It is because it's to tell us that the way the Mordechai, the Mav will explain, just if you, there were a number of calls for girls that were issued. Mordecai hides away Esther that she should not be taken. And that was against the rules of the king, against what he had wanted to do. And Mordecai really had no excuse for doing that. There's no way. So he endangered his life in order to make sure she would not be taken. In what ways was he endangering his life? The mom explains because of the things that are said over here. That is that he hides her away, but Mordecai, perhaps had he lived in another province, he could have said, I didn't hear about this. But the fact that he lived in Shushan, this was certainly known to everyone in the city that they were gathering up girls. The kings had called for the women to come. And not that he was just a recent person who came into the city, but it says Haya. Haya means not that he had just come, but he was there apparently for some amount of time. Number two, Ushmo Mordechai. His name was Mordechai, which was very known in the city. And also, he had good ichus. He had a very distinguished lineage. He came, as we said, from King Saul. So therefore, he should not have withheld her from this, according to all of Persian laws or the king's law. And if you'll say that, well, maybe he was, he himself wasn't important over here. No, he came into the exile together with Yechoniah, the king of Yehuda. In other words, that when this there were a number of exiles that happened from the land of Israel. And this exile with Yechoniah was the time when they took away all of the officers, the leaders of the Jewish people, all of the important people were taken out at that time. And number four, according to his count, it was known by everybody that he was raising this girl. Not only was this a particular girl, she had a distinguished name. Now, what are her two names? We mentioned in the beginning the name Esther, which is like the word hidden. And what about the name Hadassah? So what do we know about the Hadass from the myrtle? What do we know about it? It has a very good smell. It's very nice. It's very attractive. In other words, that she was known as not, the attractiveness was not in her beauty, this Hadassah, but this was in her actions. And that she was a niece under his guide. And there's no mother or father, so therefore who's the responsible person?
Yeah.
It's Mordechai. And she was a beautiful girl. So how was he able to, how could he, how should he have withheld her from the king? And that's what it says over here. The Rambam explains all of these things that are given over here that to tell us as to how he endangered himself in order to protect her from being brought to the king. And if so, you can understand why he, obviously, keeps on trying to find out. But he says, what's going on over here? Something is not right. And he keeps on going to the king's palace all the time to see what's happening. Okay, now, next week, I am not able to be here. And the week afterwards is Purim itself. So finally we'll be able to take a look at the Megillah that I brought for just a few moments just to see if I can open it.
There's a secret panel, right?
Yes. I mentioned the other day about some writing on the back of one of the Sifrei Torah. This is not on the... Here, this is... Now, this Megillah is called Hamela. Because, just can you hold for one sec? If you see on the top of every column, it says Hamela, the king. It's written that way to give the symbol that even though God's name is not found in the Megillah, the concept of the king, the king, is found throughout the entire story.
It's called the Hamelech Megillah.
Yeah, called Hamelech Megillah. There's no Hamelech on the first column.
You can't do that.
Because it can't, because the first word is not Hamelech in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Okay, it, again, we mentioned the different types of paragraphs. This is a paragraph which is called a closed paragraph because there's a word. The next sentences start on the same line. And there are sometimes when it's completely open, I don't see any right here, but in the Torah there are. Okay, and there's certain letters which are longer. Those are all according to the Masorah, according to the tradition, which ones they are. This,
the ten sons
of Haman. This is read in one breath to signify that they were all killed in one breath very quickly. Okay, now, you notice this over here? I don't know if you can see it. It's pinched over here? Okay, the stitching is from the back. That's because the parchment sheets are put together and stitched. The stitching also comes from an animal. And can you see on the back? Can you see these lines over here? That's because when it's a Torah or a mezuzah, or tefillin are written, they are written with what's called sirtut, or shirtut. That is, there's first scratched in, let's turn back over again,
lines
down here, and then across, and...
Even.
Yes, very even, done very well. The people who do it with great care. And just you can see on the back, this is natural, what it looks like. In the light, I can see the words from behind. Let's just see if this works. Can you see the letters through?
Mm-hmm.
That's because the ink is soaked very well in here, and the parchment is made in such a way. When the Megillah is read publicly, it is read as an egeret. Egeret is a letter, and it's not read as a scroll. This is folded up, and it takes a minute or two to fold it beforehand. The reason it is because it is called, inside of the Megillah, it's called an egeret, a letter. That is, Esther says, and it says, that they send out an egeret. They send out the story, the letter, and it is called that. So we read it, again, in the public reading, the custom is to read it that way. And it's folded up. There's lots of fun, because if something's folded up like that, how you keep on turning, there are no pages to turn. If it's a scroll, you just roll it as you read it, and add to the excitement for the one who is reading it. And there are certain tunes that are a little bit different at certain places. Like we mentioned last week, the tune of Eicha, the sad tune that is read for certain sentences. There's also a joyous tune that's read for certain sentences. And also at the end of each of the chapters, it has a... Well, that's just a plate. It has a specific ending. So let me just read you, and with this we'll conclude. Going back where it says that he was sent, he went into exile. So that is read with the sad tune of Eicha. So just on the beginning of sentence 5. Also, I should point out that there are certain sentences that the custom is to the entire congregation reads those sentences. Certain, let's call them the distinguished sentences, including the 10 sons of Haman, are read by the entire congregation. I'm starting with sentence 5 of chapter 2. Ish Yehudi Haya Bishushan Habira Ushma Mordechai Ben Yair Ben Shimi Ben Kish Ish Yemini Asher Hagla Mirushalayim Im Hagla Asher Haglasa Im Yechanya Melech Yehuda Asher Hagla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. So sentence number 6 was read with the tune of Eicha, with the sad tune. Sentence 7 goes back to the regular tune. So there are a couple of sentences like that throughout the Megillah, and certain sentences are read with a joyous tune. Umar, what?
Probably at the end.
At the end. U'mordechai yata milisei ha-melech yilmukum. Like that. Yep. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's the tune to it. There is, somebody asked me on Tuesday morning, where are the rules written? So there are also certain words that are read in the Megillah twice with a different word about them. And I once asked someone, where are those words, where are the rules written as to which words are read twice according to the custom? And he told me in the footnote, he happens to be the head of Jewish studies at a university now, but I asked him when we were both in college, I said, where does it have a list of the sentences that are read twice? And he said, without a second hesitation, he said, in the footnotes in the Yehoash translation of Tanakh, and I had not heard at that time of the Yehoash translation of the Tanakh, and he knew that it was found in the footnotes there. Anyway, that's why he's head of the Jewish Studies Department someplace. Okay, so again, next week we do not have class. The week afterwards is Purim. And I hope to see everybody in Shul Purim night on Wednesday night. There's going to be two readings of the Megillah on Purim Day, once at the 7 o'clock minyan and once at 9:30. You're not allowed to come to the 9:30 one. You have to come to the 7 o'clock one.
Okay, so you have 10.
Yes.
And you'll need to meet the 9 o'clock also.
No, we don't. Oh, so let me just turn.